Happen with Reef Bum is sponsored by Polo Reef, Champion Lighting and Supply, and Polyp Lab.
Hey, hey, what's happening, everybody? And welcome back to another episode of Rapping with Reef Bum. I'm your host, Keith Barklehammer. So today I have the pleasure of welcoming Jeff Turner from Reef Aquarium Design to the show. Jeff, man, thank you so much for taking the time to join us tonight.
Yeah, no problem. Looking forward to it, and plenty of fishy things to discuss.
Oh, man, I think, I'm about to read part of your bio here. I think we could spend the whole entire show talking about your history in the aquarium reef keeping business. It's quite impressive. Jeff has been involved with coral reef conservation, marine aquariums, and ornamental aquaculture for a lifetime. Some accomplishments include being a member of the Florida Marine Aquarium Society since 1962, and president owner of Exotic Aquaria Inc. from 1980 through 1998, which is when he merged his company with Oceans Reefs and Aquariums Inc. OORA. He designed, built, installed, and provided all aquacultured corals and marine fish for the Indo-Pacific Coral Reef Aquarium located in the Sant, is that how you pronounce it? Sant?
Yeah, Sant Ocean Hall.
Sant Ocean Hall for the Smithsonian's National Museum of Natural History in 2008. He has been the Florida Marine Life Association Vice President since 1995 and has been the current president since 2013. He is also a board member for the Rising Tide Conservation, Florida Keys National Marine Sanctuary, SAC, committee member for marine life, and a non-native fish and wildlife technical assistance group member for marine life. Additionally, he is the owner, president, CEO of Reef Aquaria Design, Inc., Boyd Enterprises, and Jellyfish Art, LLC. But before we start chatting with Jeff, I want to take care of some business and thank the sponsors of this show. The sponsors are very, very important to me, because they provide all this support. And that means a lot, since I want to continue to foster this learning environment on the show by bringing on awesome guests. Polo Reef. Make sure to check out Polo Reef's new YouTube video that drops this Friday. It's road trip time, and the Polo team drive deep into New Jersey for a Japanese koi show and festival. Andrew had six of his prize koi in the competition, and let's just say that anxiety and a mix of other emotions were definitely flowing. Find out if the judges deem the Polo Reef koi worthy or subpar. Make sure to subscribe to their YouTube channel at Polo Reef for video drop notifications. Champion Lighting and Supply. Besides being a place for hobbyists to purchase saltwater aquarium supplies online, Champion Lighting is also a wholesale distributor for many popular brands. If you own an aquarium store or an aquarium service company, contact Champion Lighting through their website at championlighting.com to set up a wholesale account. Polyp Lab, they do their part by being ecologically responsible, using less plastic and more recyclable material. Reefroids is backed by science and uses 100% ocean-sourced ingredients. No filler, no OGM, no gimmick. Polyp Lab, straight results, the best choice for your marine collection. See the Reefroids difference for yourself. So, Jeff, man, you had as I was saying at the beginning there, you had quite a journey, have had quite a journey in the aquarium industry. I think we could, I talked about spending a good chunk of this show just talking about all the things that you have accomplished, and it's been very impressive. Can you just give us a brief overview of how you got started and ended up where you're at today?
Yeah, it goes way back. Growing up in South Florida, snorkeling and diving, off Miami Beach or in Biscayne Bay, and having my first marine aquarium probably at 5 years old. Catching a Beau Gregor and a hi-hat at that time was pretty easy in the shallows. Even getting onto a neon goby or, bandit coral shrimps, things like that, living under a coral head. And, you're kids, so at that time we were bringing those home, put them in our small aquariums, probably a 10-gallon, maybe a 15-gallon at that time. And then advancing to the next aquarium, I built my first glass aquarium with my dad when I was 7 years old with glass panels and silicone. It was 36 by 11 by 12 inches tall. I still remember to this day, we used to paint it with this material that got this crackling effect on the back. It'd be blue or it'd be green or red. I forget the name of that paint, But that would be the background. We would go to the beach and sift the sand and then put a magnet through it, which would be shell gravel. We'd put a magnet through it to get the metals out because the metal was toxic. And then we'd put that over an under gravel filter plate, which was a green, I think it was a metaframe plate years ago. And eventually, you know, we got to Nectonix filter plates. I could just go on and on with the amount of the early side of the trade. But my father was second president of the Florida Marine Aquarium Society in 57. And, you know, I was born in 62. So we go back, you know, to the historical record of the beginning of marine aquarium keeping in South Florida, which was really the starting point for the whole nation. Some guys were doing it in New York. Obviously, San Diego had some people too. But, you know, we were in the warm tropical waters of South Florida. People would catch these creatures that they found snorkeling or scuba diving and place them in an aquarium. And, you know, then my dad at that time, I have an article on the wall over here from 62, sometime in 62, I think it was November of 62, he built he helped to build the Hialeah Racetrack Aquarium in 62. I was 10 months old.
Wow.
So, you know, he was already in the commercial side of things, and I was basically born into it, and have carried through a lifetime of aquarium keeping, which amounts to, you know, now almost 60-odd years of experience. My son Joe is working with us full-time. Jolene and I, my wife, have been married for 35 years. We've dove together for 45 of those years. And we have dove all around the world, including Australia, this past almost a year ago now, October, November. So I've dove in Hawaii and Guam, Australia, both coasts of Mexico. We've been to, the French Polynesia. We've been to the Maldives. We've been through Indonesia off to the Forgotten Islands. So, you know, there's a ton of diving too, which also lends back to, you know, understanding the education, and you learn about the animals when they're in their natural environment. So, you know, diving for me to a greater extent is an observation exercise, but I've also had and held a commercial marine life collecting license since they were very first issued by the state of Florida with our limited species program that we have here, which is a licensed, very, how would I call it, transparent and quality fishery with size limits. There's quantity limits, there's species that are off limits or that are on limits that you can collect. Like, I mean, a classic example is the maximum size for a Queen Angel is 8 inches. Now, the fishermen suggested that was the max size. We didn't want people going out and catching, you know, I don't know, 20-inch Queen Angels. It's really kind of big for an aquarium, and it's lived out a long life, and it should be left out as a breeding angel in the ocean. So, you know, fisheries wide and industry wide, I've been active my entire life.
What have you seen, you know, over the years that has really changed a lot, you know, in the aquarium industry? What stands out?
Well, I mean, in 71, my brother and I won Best in Show at the Florida Marine Aquarium Society. I was 9 and he was 11. And we both did this entry, collected all the marine life for the aquarium. And at that time, it was all living stuff that we were collecting here off Elia Key, off of Fowey Light, Key Biscayne, those areas. And the dynamic back then was really cool because we were catching and holding and keeping live coral. And then the Lacey Act came into effect somewhere around 74, I believe. And that just shut it down completely. So we couldn't even catch live coral anymore for aquariums. And, you know, then we transitioned to static, dead coral aquariums or bleached coral skeletons at that time. And, you know, that transition from that huge amount of time to maybe 25 plus years ago when we were again, you know, bringing in some of the first acropods into South Florida in the late 80s, I would call it. I actually had an office next door to Dick Boyd from ChemiPure, and he had one of the first, I can't remember the name of it, but it was Andy Ehaus. It was a Dutch mini reef years ago. Those were the first mini reef aquariums ever sold in North America. And it was distributed by a guy named Andy Ehaus, I believe, out of Tampa. Don't remember his company name. But I remember Dick Boyd having that there. And then, you know, I located next to him coincidentally because I was looking for a new warehouse. And he had that mini reef aquarium. And I was already collecting live rock and other organisms for the marine aquarium trade. So I was already up to speed. But, you know, the transitions that took place from now 35 years ago to where we are today is really significant. That, you know, from metal halides to, you know, power compacts to, you know, all now LEDs. And, you know, having quality built chillers with titanium coils, you know, calcium reactors. I saw the very first calcium reactor made in the world was at in Dusseldorf at the aquarium there in Dusseldorf. And that was, that was probably 95 when that was built. And that was an old Eheim canister that this gentleman was taking the coral skeletons and dissolving them with a low pH. And, you know, coral was going wild in his aquarium. It was fascinating. So all of those, you know, elements and change, I think really the technology has changed dramatically. We've gotten DC pumps. We have obviously plenty of ways to manage and monitor alkalinity, calcium, and other variables within the aquarium. But you go back to the same fundamentals that are always existing. You have a box of water that's holding salt water, and you're dealing with chemistry, you're dealing with, you know, physics, you're dealing with environmental changes that you're controlling by manipulating that chemistry, the lighting cycles, temperature, just the animals that go in there, the fact that we have a tremendous amount of aquaculture to everything nowadays. Corals are, I would guess, you know, I can't imagine hundreds and hundreds of available aquaculture corals from some very reliable sources. And the direction we've gone through time with aquaculture fish, aquaculture invertebrates, I mean, just think about it now. There's got to be, I would think, readily available 100 different marine species. When in the very beginning, when Aqualife was running out of Walker's Cay with Martin Moe or Skip Moe doing it, at that time, there was neon gobies and a series of clownfish.
Yeah.
And that was about it. Maybe a pompano or other things. You know, they were trying to breed food fish is what they really were trying to do. But, you know, things changed there. And right now, I mean, we're obviously big proponents of utilizing aquaculture marine life at all levels for all the aquariums we build. And to define it as one complete statement, you know, we're able to build, you know, healthy slices of the coral reef in our home and offices, and it's fascinating. You know, even this 2,000-gallon system, it's actually a 1,680-gallon external box dimensions, but overall the system behind me holds 2,000 gallons of salt water. And, you know, we simply overran the LED lights tonight to run until 9 o'clock. So we got the right color temperature. You can see it in the background. And I get to look at it in a reflection from another aquarium that's across the space, and I see down the length view, which is super cool because it's really, you know, crystal clear. Corals are growing super well, and we just continue to have fun with it. So the changes that have taken place, you know, is it humans getting better at it? That's an absolute fact. And I've said this before, you know, there's a lot of ways to do it. But you know, refine it down to what works for you and what you're used to doing. And then we replicate and replicate and replicate that on a continuous basis. I just, you know, personally and the overall team are fortunate to have, well, we live in South Florida. We're in a really one of the best economic zones in all of North America. Mm. There's a tremendous amount of people interested in the ocean. There's a tremendous amount of significant wealth of people that want to be near the ocean who might have a big yacht or a massive house or a second house or a third house down here in Florida. And that has a big benefit to us and our business. And I think by design, I've ran down that path through time, and we get to, create some of the most fabulous marine reef jellyfish displays in all of North America in one of the best markets on the planet. I would put it to you clearly, I mean, we're in America. Everybody wants to come to America or to North America and sell their products. I mean, we have this really significant trade in marine life, the biggest in the world. And certainly there's a lot of really key players out there that have done a phenomenal job. And then with, sites, podcasts like Reef Bum and others that are out there, I mean, there's a lot of great information that gets out to the public in a free format that helps people to, learn and determine their own paths for success. With that, Keith, I'd like to say, too, that one of the refining factors, the factors that we keep dealing with on a constant basis, is refining down those processes and creating that model for the entire team to follow. So when a new one comes in, coincidentally, in the last 3 weeks, we finished one in Naples that got salt watered up now 3.5 weeks ago. Another one in Palm Beach that got salt watered up 2 weeks ago. We finished another jellyfish aquarium as well that has to wait for millwork, but that's watered up and it can run and hold jellyfish. And I've been working on this 2,000 gallon on the west coast of Florida. It's a cylinder that's about 90 inches tall, 72 inches in diameter, with a center post in the middle that I had a custom aquarose piece made for that, because it was very hard to figure out how you're going to decorate a cylinder that's monolithic at that level. I got a huge sump. I've got a really tremendous room. The filtration room is like a dream. It's 16 feet long by 12 foot wide and 9 foot ceilings. I've got floor drains, electricity, temperature control, you name it, it's all there. So we're installing what I would call to be a really significant life support system that, is like an engine underneath, maybe, I don't know, let's give it a name, a Bentley, I don't know, some really fast car. But it's gonna be top-notch. It's really spectacular. The only issue is I just can't photograph it and post it on the internet right now.
Hey,
maybe one day the client will allow us to do that.
Hey, Jeff, one technical issue. It seems like the audio is better when you're facing the camera versus away, because I think it's not cutting out, but it's not as loud as
here.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem. I'll talk into it more. And maybe I'll get a headset. I join the next.
Well, you know what? Let's take this opportunity, because you agreed to let me run like a 10-minute video that you guys have on your YouTube channel. I might get my wrist slapped for doing that, but I'm willing to take that chance. It's a great video that summarizes the whole operation there. And so we're gonna run that video now. It's like a 10-minute thing. If you want to go grab a headset, grab some food or whatnot, then. We could do that, and then we're going to come back and talk a lot about what we see in that, and I certainly want to ask you some questions about that tank behind you. So
okay.
With that, let's do the tour, and we'll be right back.
So we're getting here in the beginning of October. Fall is on the way. Weather pattern just literally changed in the last 2 days here in Florida. We're gonna come on in to our building. We've never done a real facilities tour, so I'm gonna do it quickly, and we're gonna get a good overview. So the building itself is about 24,000 square feet. We renovated the entire space, everything. It took us about 9 months to renovate the whole space. First thing I put in was this jellyfish aquarium. There was a wall here. We put a see-through 450 gallon, beautiful jellyfish aquarium. That was the first aquarium operating in the building. Renovated all the offices, the floors, the tiles. Put up a couple of large TVs with our rad portfolios going across. We have our 2,000-gallon full-blown reef aquarium. This is now running about 3.5 years, all aquaculture corals throughout. And it really is doing super well, growing. I have another ex-trade show aquarium here on wheels. This one I'm going to set up before I leave next week for a month. This is going to be a see-through soft coral reef aquarium. It has its light sail that I developed to go on top of the aquarium to get it out of the way for when you service, but it's super cool. You can swing it out of the way completely, but that's going to be another beautiful aquarium. I have this other jellyfish aquarium that'll also get filled before I leave. This one will probably put a new species of jellyfish in, but this was also on wheels that we used at trade shows. We're really not going to bring it out anymore to do that. The filtration system for the 1680 is pretty significant. It's very detailed, operating, all Deltek equipment. There's an Apex with the dose as well. Clearwater scrubbers, and then my really cool Kalkwasser reactor. This thing is working super well. Lots of ChemiPure going out, and then off into the warehouse. You get into the warehouse, you'll notice it's all concrete T construction. This building is built like a bunker. Full line of all the Deltek equipment here for delivery anywhere in North America and for all the customs that we build as well. At the end of the day, really nobody's around, but typically every day there's about 18 people on site every single day. Finished goods with ChemiPure is there. You'll see a lot of pallets out ready to go. I looked at it a minute ago. We got Tampa going out. I got a Petco going out. There's some other ones. There's one going to Arizona right there. Here's our big gantry that we build the large glass reef aquariums on, or we might lift them up and put them on the delivery trailer or into a truck for delivery outbound. But that gantry has really helped out a lot. Lots of jellyfish art aquariums in stock ready for shipping. ChemiPure is a pulsing thing. You get lots of waves of shipments. There's one there going to Turkey, and there's another larger one there going to Doha, which is Qatar, some tropic marine salt, which we really like and use a lot. More finished goods with ChemiPure. And then we'll go into the back. This is all ChemiPure production. You have bottles and caps and bags and labels and jars, and our semi-automated production line here rolls all the way through. Capper, you got white caps there. They're probably making CP10 labels right there. So you'll make the ChemiPure coming down through here. 3 forklifts on site, new air compressor over this way. 3 guys are in this area all the time, working every day. Again, a ton of bottles for ChemiPure ready to go. RO filters and DI filters for the whole building. So we can produce out of here about up to 1,500 gallons a day in zero TDS water through the RO and the double stage large DI canisters too. And coming back through all your cardboard for the ChemiPure line, any and all boxes for any and all formulas, including VitaChem, ChemiClean, they're all here in this large space. We'll now go into the aquaculture division. So this is the first lab we put together. This is jellyfish art. Somebody put my face up here with my I Love Hip Hop shirt. Did you see that? So the Jelly Lab, it's really come along super well. Here's some extra large jellyfish we're growing out for a special order or a large jellyfish aquarium we're building now. All of our jellyfish, or 99% of them, are grown right in this space. Sometimes I do collect some out in the wild for new broodstock, but it's Aurelia aureus species. But throughout the whole area, there's live sponges and there's jellyfish and more jellyfish. Here's some XLs ready, larges, mediums, smalls. All sizes of jellyfish typically available at all times. We have auto feed systems. You have your small jellyfish under production right here, but these little guys might be, so from 8-8, and today we are at, you know, almost 2 months, but that's how long it takes just to get to that size. From really tiny ones right there, but lots of them. All of these are from the same day, different sizes. You'll see some of them grow taller or bigger, and some of them stay smaller. I've been trying to get to 6 foot my whole life, and I've never gotten there. There's their life cycle. Again, different size jellies here. You got green water, rotifers, brine shrimp hatching right here. You have your polyps, so there's a lot of polyps here. As we ran an estimate the other day, there's 10,000 polyps right there. Some new Chrysal strobilation systems systems right here that we just plumbed in. Alex did a great job putting this together with a new sump and system. We're ready to roll with this system going now. Out here, we have our water holding tanks for fresh water and mixing for salt water. Fish foods are all back in that refrigerator. And we have three different coral labs. Electric panels all on GFI circuits. All of this I basically designed by hand, and the team all put it all together. This is our first lab where we bring corals through, quarantine them. We'll have different fish in inventory, but we're using a lot of vertical space. We own the building, so we're using the space very efficiently. And there's lots of corals in here for sale or not for sale. There's some clownfish. Actually, those are FJ props, clownfish right there. Those are going back in his new system that we're gonna set up on the floor on Friday. I thought about buying a Porsche GT3, and I thought, what the heck am I gonna do with a Porsche GT3? So I built a coral lab. This lab is really significant. We have a lot of coral, lots of softies here. There's seven independent systems, 56 radions, 28 MP40s. There's 14 L2s in there, all Ecotec pumps. There's Clearwater scrubbers on every row, but seven independent systems. Deltec skimmers, Deltec calcium reactors. We're dosing different liquids. We have our Triton up top testing alkalinity, and you can see the buffer, the calcium trace and carbon that gets dosed in. Dehumidifier in each one of the labs. The temperature profile in this lab is about 77 degrees. In the jelly lab, we're running at about 69 to 70 degrees. They like it a little cooler for production, but the corals like it at around 77, 78, no less than 76. So we run temperature profiles in the buildings with wall units, and I have a backup wall unit. And then again, all of this is on Apex, so we monitor it constantly. So if one AC went down, the other one can run the whole building. And I usually set them at a different temperature profile. This one might be at 76, that one might be at 78. So one runs, and then we'll alternate those to keep them running. But it really helps it a lot. So our coral labs really has matured a lot. We've got a great team helping now with all aspects of aquaculture. So going back through the building in our rad section, chop saws, table saws, our CNC machine is covered up right now. PVC parts, I've got valves, every kind of PVC parts, pipes, all of the different components that we need to plumb any reef or jellyfish or freshwater aquarium. Vacuum system for the CNC. Here's a glass tank being built right now under construction. Joe's been working on this one. This is going in a high-rise residence in Boca Raton, right on the ocean. We'll get a video of this getting delivered, I think next Monday, but this is about I'm gonna say it's about 375, really nice. It's 70 inches by, it appears to be about 30 inches by 42 tall. All glass, silicone construction. We're still gonna put the 45s in here. We got strips on the bottom. Here's some great rock examples. Here's a Marco Rocks right here on the floor. That's our base pieces. This is the Aqua Roche that I've been using a lot to decorate. This is for just an example for a client that just came in. They have a large 50 inch aquarium. We'll do a Marco Rock stack. We'll fill in the Aqua Roche on top and make it see-through. So it's kind of cool, but that's the beginning of a rock stack. Really neat product, but we always have all of this in inventory. Electrical components, more Deltec pieces and parts, moving carts and build tables. And here is the building's dinner bell, or lunch bell, we call it. And coming back through the offices, my wife stuck me here in the back in my own office. My discus are going to sleep. It's nice and quiet back here. I have my old all glass aquarium sign, some neat things around. My little reef tank in my office is doing super well. Soft corals, mushrooms, a little fire coral from the aquacultured Florida rock. Same fish I've had in this aquarium for about 8 or 9 years now. Really doing really well. Upstairs we have marketing and sales. We got our great little kitchen inside there. So it's really kind of our home away from home from business. And Jolene has this great office up front, and her reef aquarium is really beautiful. She claims it's the best reef aquarium in the whole office. But yeah, it's really special, nice little reef aquarium. So if you're coming to visit us, we're here typically 8 to 5, Monday through Friday. Sometimes if somebody comes through the weekends, we give a tour as well. But it's a neat place to visit. You can at least look in through the showroom, see the beautiful reef aquarium, the jellyfish aquariums, the salt cylinder 5 and 2 gallon nano jellyfish aquariums. We have our rad books always available here. So if somebody came by, we just had a guy from Canada come in. We have a whole group coming in March, and here's our reef aquarium design booklet. We have ChemiPure brochures and everything too. So if you really want an aquarium education and learn from an aquarium of knowledge, you can come visit us here in Fort Lauderdale. Like, subscribe, and we'll see you next time.
Jeff, man, you're going a mile a minute for 10 minutes. I mean, what's going on there, man? That's like quite the tour, quite the facility.
Yeah, you know, it's just the current state of mind, we'll call that. It really never stops, right? So you build this big-ass aquarium like this one, which is only 2,000 gallons, or you build a 5,000, or, you know, probably one of the preeminent aquarists in the nation now with a somewhat unlimited budget might be Andrew Sandler. He built a 17,000 gallon aquarium in his own house. And, you know, that type of stuff doesn't stop. You know, fish never take a day off. The day they do, they're dead. I've said that for years. And really, when you're dealing with a marine reef aquarium, there's always the need for something to happen, right? You have to feed them. We do a lot of automated feeds, whether we're using an Apex feed barrel or we're using an Ehine, you know, feed barrel for dry foods, or, you know, we develop and create small refrigerators with Ocean Nutrition or Reef Nutrition feeds in there, liquid feeds, and I'll be metering that in. This aquarium gets fed 9 times a day with a selection of foods and a small refrigerator. And then we change that out too. So there's always something happening, right? And I think that's the other fascinating part that we can't let go. You know, we were talking a little bit about Chris Meckley. I mean, how does he take a day off? I don't know.
Chris doesn't take a day off. I think on his days off, he's actually at the farm, you know? But if he's away, then I'm sure he's somehow connected, but
he was going on a trip recently, and I spoke with him. And I said, "You're really going to leave?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm out of here. I'm gone for 5 days if these guys get this work done or something like that." And you know, I've gotten to the point now. You know, it all comes back into the team, right? So we have a really fantastic team here at all levels for all the companies. But when you get into the aquarium side of this, the caring for, you know, dozens and dozens of really significant reef, fowler, jellyfish aquariums, there's a lot at play. And we have a tendency to add more every year. So if I could forecast out the next 5 years, we'll do another 50 really significant installations. I think 10 is a really wonderful number on an annual basis. And with that, now you have, you know, 100 and something odd significant aquariums all over the place. And they're all kind of within a strike distance of about 110 miles at the most from where we are in our core central. But it's just fascinating. You know, each and every time I get to go back and look at one of these really significant projects and to say, well, gosh, I haven't been here in 3 months or 6 months or a year. And you go back and you go, oh my God, this aquarium we built in Atlanta 6 years ago is still, you know, a thriving ecosystem. Even looking at what Phil Wind has done up at Reef Escapes, his company up in Washington, D.C. area, he takes care of the Smithsonian now for, I don't know, 14 years, something of that nature, and still running and growing and thriving. They have a few scratches in the glasses, a few things they like to do, but they still have never taken it down. And that's in a federal building, right?
Yeah.
Even during COVID, you know, he had to have access because it's a living creature in a federal building. Even though the Fed was shut down, he was still allowed and gained access to care for the animals. And I think that plays out into the client's perspective, right? The clients who have these beautiful aquariums love them. And they want them to be cared for professionally and properly. And they get home and they say, wow, just look at my aquarium. I mean, I'm not in their shoes with that kind of bank accounts. But I think they still get the same pleasure any one of us gets out of looking at a really beautiful, established aquarium.
So you guys basically, you know, have mostly commercial accounts, accounts that, some residential accounts, I guess. But you're doing the installs. You're not doing any maintenance on those tanks after the installs.
Oh, no, we do all the maintenance.
You do all the maintenance. Ah, all right. So you're installing exactly, and you're maintaining.
Yeah, we don't have a TV show and we don't want one. That's a fact. And, you know, I think the TV shows were good between Fish Tank Kings at one time, which was a Living Color offshoot. And then, you know, ATM had Tank, which was a successful TV show, but, you know, building projects that we don't build. I mean, we're building really only and exclusively natural systems. I really kind of shy away, and we do shy away as a company from an artificial exhibit. And that's another really...
I'm not a fan of those either, but, you know, they got their place, I guess.
Yeah, they do in the trade. But again, from a business perspective, you know, this aquarium right here, running probably close to 4 years now, I mean, you know, if it was in somebody's house, I'm going to make a wild guess that it would be, $50,000 a year to manage easily.
So is that something that you could do an install, residential install for a tank like that?
Oh, we do it all the time.
You do it all the time. Okay. You've been referring to that tank, and I've been ogling it the entire time you've been on there. Talk to us, Jeff, about the setup on that tank and the methods that you guys use to maintain that tank.
Well, this aquarium was at a client's home in West Pass, which is on the west coast of Florida near Sarasota. And we delivered it with a crane and got it in the house, put it on the stand. And literally 3 days later, the owner calls us and says his wife is very upset. We have to make the tank smaller. We just delivered it with a crane.
Okay.
You can't make it smaller. It's in a frame. So he wanted it a foot thinner. It's 16, almost 16 feet long, 54 inches wide front to back, and 42 tall. So he wanted to cut a foot off, make it 15 feet by... 42 inches. And I'm like, we can't do anything to it. We have to build a new tank. He goes, well, how much? Just like that on the phone. I'm like, well, give me a day. I got to figure that out. This is not like an overnight thing. You know, instantaneous. I just throw out a number. And I went back the next day. I think we mentioned to him $60,000 to build a new tank and stand. I had to build another structural stainless steel stand. And then I said to him, well, we'll give you a $20,000 credit for the old one. He goes, okay, great. Wires us the money literally that day.
Wow.
$42,000. I said, okay, how fast can you do it? And the guys are like, what are you going to do with that? I said, well, we bought this effing building 6 years ago. And this aquarium, I put it in here like 5 years ago, dry. And I said, well, we're going to put it in the new building. And they go, oh, God, here we go. You know, got here, put it on the stand. I designed out a big sump. The sump is about 400 gallons of operating water. And underneath the length is a 12-foot additional sump.
Oh, wow.
So the full capacity when we filled it was 1,940 gallons. I know that because Charlie from VIP Seawater came here, and we filled it slowly through a double micron mesh bag to try to slowly filter the clean seawater on a good day. Sometime, I think it was April, the water temperature's good. There's not a lot of rain. I don't really use natural seawater to speak of, but being that I needed 2,000 gallons at one shot, it was easier to do it.
Yeah.
So I designed out the whole system. There's 20 radions on top of there. I think 14 of them or 12 of them are maybe Gen 4s, then there was some new Gen 5 blues put down the middle. There's a whole array of Deltec filtration. There's a 7i Black Series. There's a TwinTech 10,000 calcium reactor on there. There's a fleece filter that's on it. There's an Aqualogic 1.5-ton chiller. There's a 200-watt Aqua Ultraviolet UV sterilizer. There's a complete Apex with Trident and 8 different dosing heads. 4 of them are for the feed systems and 4 of them are for liquids. There's a really cool triple tower, blue tower, a calc reactor that I made a couple years ago that's done great. The pH on the system runs somewhere at the low of about 8.3 to about 8.5.
Nice.
You know, Chris and I spoke at length about that too, and I wholeheartedly agree with, again, keeping an elevated pH on a reef system and trying to stabilize that pH. So this one runs 10.3 gallons at night, which is the total evaporation of this system in a day. And it runs from about 6 p.m. till 7 a.m. And it meters out that 10.3 gallons the whole time. And I know that they had to program that Apex to do that because it didn't do that much volume in that much time. So it would only do so much volume. So, but it is doing it. You can tell if it goes off. It takes some time now. It's interesting. Once the pH is stabilized that high with calc washer, it takes a lot of time for that pH to now start falling backwards. And I would believe with your reef systems and doing stony corals too, I would believe, I guess, I'm going to ask you an interview question too. What pH do you keep your tank at?
Yeah, no, you know, I follow the Chris Meckley calc washer method. I use the drum method.
Yeah.
And so that has really worked very well for me. And so, yeah, my pH is, you know, typically I got two different systems, 8.2 to 8.5, pretty consistently. So it's, I also have a air exchange unit. I've got all my tanks and my systems in my basement, basement. So that I think certainly helps. But, yeah, I do the same thing in terms of running a calcium reactor and using a calc washer. I think it's a great combination. What are you doing? Any trace element dosing, ICP testing on a regular basis?
We are. I was going to point out we are using the desiccant to absorb CO2 out of the air too.
Uh-huh.
Alex stays up on top of that, and we're dosing. You know, Reef Essentials really, which is our own in-house made additives mostly. I know that we've used some of Julian's aminos in there, but we're using MAG. We're using Trace, and we do some denitrification, but not a lot, really. There is an old Clearwater scrubber, double chamber unit that's on here, too. That's also helping to absorb organics out of the solution, and also take out phosphates out of the water as well. But you got to keep up with it, and I think that's, again, the common factor. You know, keeping up with your system.
Everyone's
different.
So, I mean, obviously you've been you've talked about being in the hobby for a very, very long time, and you've seen a lot over that time. Has the complexity of the hobby been a something that kind of gets in the way sometimes of success these days, because there's just so many things going on with the reef tank? There's a lot of variables. It seems like back when we all started in this hobby many years ago, that it was a more simplistic hobby. There's a lot more things now to have on a reef tank in terms of electronics, monitors, controllers, additives. What's your take on all that, Jeff? Did it get to a point where it got too complex and we kind of had to step back a little bit and go, hey, whoa, we got to make this, you know, not go crazy with this stuff?
Well, I mean, that's a loaded gun for sure. And the reality is that, you know, keeping things simple and straightforward is really the foundation of creating a long-term successful aquarium installation. You know, everything I do realistically related to these projects and even in the building is long-term. You have to got it. Forecast what your goal is, what your plan is. And with that, you can't overcomplicate the living crap out of it, because when you do that, now everybody has to be in that same field of knowledge. And some of it's beyond myself. I'm going to tell you flat out, I'm just not going to create spreadsheets, and I'm not going to sit here and program everybody's Apex. Because if you have, you just tell me, you have 50 different Apex in 50 different locations, how the hell are you going to manage that? You tell me, who's going to monitor and keep track of all the probes and all the dosing and the reset, right? Power goes off, something happens, internet goes down. Who do you call? Well, we'll just call Keith. Or call Jeff. Well, no, that isn't the answer. So when you get to the level that we are now, it's very challenging to say, I'm going to duplicate this on every project, and that every project has that budget to allow that kind of process. That process, I think, is continually refined, so much so that, you know, we're backing down on some of that at times. And do you have enough space to put all this stuff? You got a freaking basement. We don't have basements in Florida, okay?
That's right.
So, space is limited. This new one I'm doing on the West Coast right now, 2,000-gallon cylinder, really intense. I have a room 16 feet long, 12 foot wide, and 9-foot ceilings. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Wow.
I can't publish those photos, but that room, eventually, hopefully I will, but that room is going to be spectacular. I mean, it's as good as, I mean, you can't think we're going to go backwards from what we did 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 15 years ago. We're only going to move and advance strategically to do what works, right? And I mean, there's just an S ton of, testing devices now, right?
Yep.
I don't want to disparage any one company at any given time. I might disparage all of them at once. That might be easier. But some things don't work sometimes, right? And who do you call? I mean, even getting somebody on a hotline, theoretically, you have to make an appointment nowadays to speak to a live person. Or you hire, I don't know, there's some guys around the country that have a whole bunch of Apex. Mark Silverman comes to mind up in Long Island. He's an aquarist who runs a services business up there too. Brian Dunleavy, he's up that way. There's some guys that really have some great understanding of all of that. But, you know, it's electronics, man. Things don't work. It happens on the boat. My wife has a boat, you know. And it's nice.
Shit happens and fails, you know. So it's like... And
GPS screens, right?
Speaking of things that would fail, what do you guys build in terms of redundancies to all the systems that you install? Like, what are some of the basic things that you recommend to people to have spare, pieces of, or spare pieces of equipment?
Yeah.
Other types of redundancy, just to help avoid a disaster.
Liquid level controls, right? There's a few out on the market. Everybody makes a little tweaky of a difference of a one. I happen to use SpectraPure units for years. It's air pressure actuated solenoid and a mechanical float. That's your backup. That mechanical float, I think everybody needs a mechanical float as backup. Just the fact of having monitoring is a beautiful thing. But, I want to monitor temperature, pH, and water on the floor. Those are the top
priorities. Yeah, water on the floor is a good one.
Yeah, magnesium and alkalinity and, going down that route and going into all the micro elements. When you roll into a hobbyist realm, right, you're your own aquarist. I'm my own aquarist. If I have my own aquarium at my house, but when you have 50 reefs of this nature and some much bigger than this, now what do? Do we stare at our phone all day and look at, all the alarms? That's problematic. So as far as backup stuff that you need, you really need a backup water pump. That could be as basic as a mag drive with a flexible hose to plug in case your main pump dies, or it could be a replacement for the main pump. Certainly, recognizing that you need to shut off the heat generating elements. We're in South Florida, it gets hot. You want to shut off the heat generating elements if you can automatically in case your chiller fails or your water pump fails and you have 20 radions running up this plant
yeah.
at one time. They're LED. They don't emit heat. Well, hell, yes,
they do.
Yeah. They emit heat, and that heat's just dissipating in a different direction, not necessarily down into the water like a metal halide did years ago where you're getting burned by touching the lens. You're not getting burned touching the lens, but you're still generating heat. And other backups, you got to have food. You should probably have a backup pump for your skimmer. Those fail.
Yep.
you know, your RO system, you definitely need to have extra DI hanging out, right? You need an RO membrane in the refrigerator waiting to be replaced. You need sediments and carbon filters and a multitude of them. We have all of that in the back. And then you need your additives, right? You need your calc washer. You need pure water. It's another big one. You know, an ICP, I got to say, it's been an interesting road with ICP. You can go get all the tests you want. I mean, maybe Chris is that smart. He can understand what the hell he's looking at. And there's some guys out there that really understand it. You might understand it more than me. But, you know, if you stare at it all day long and you have 50 aquariums like this, now what are you doing? It becomes a full-time gig.
Yeah.
And it isn't like you just hire somebody who worked at a public aquarium, you know, or just got a marine biology degree. That's great. They have the degrees and all. But can they apply that into actual work on the spot? That's a learned process. When shit hits the fan, what do? Well, you need to react. First thing that happens.
Yeah, so another problem that I see in the hobby is that, you know, there is a lot of information, and sometimes there's so much information that we might have a tendency to overreact when maybe we should just kind of like sit back and maybe observe the corals more so and let them be the indicator, the true indicator in terms of whether or not to take action on something versus, you know, the data itself. It's kind of a fine line. And, I think collecting the data is a good thing. Taking it in is a good thing. Analyzing it is a good thing. But you know, I guess what I'm saying is that it doesn't always make sense to act quick on it, but to kind of like just sit there and wait and observe.
Well, I'm going to say another thing too. Trends is another important aspect. So Joe, you know, is half my age. He has literally every client's aquarium, all the parameters into a spreadsheet that's a constant active basis. We didn't do this before. He implemented it about a year and a half ago, and it's live. So you're at the account, you enter the data in from your testing, and it comes up red, green, yellow, and it has different phases of those colorations, and you can look at it right away. You know, is the trend going up? Is the trend going down? And I'm talking about looking at all the accounts at one time on a spreadsheet. That's fascinating. And that's an important thing to recognize, too. They'll trend up sometimes. They'll trend down. Why is that happening, right? Is it we're not adding enough alkalinity or buffer, right? We're not adding enough mag to keep it up at, you know, 1,400 or whatever our target is for that particular aquarium or that type of aquarium. So it's a constant state of improvement. And even for you to think about, Keith, too, I don't know how many, you've interviewed a lot of people. I looked at it earlier, like 192 of us, crazy fish guys.
Getting close to 200 shows.
Yeah, so with that, there's a lot of methodology, right? And streamlining that methodology back into a professional business is a whole nother task. Because let's say we're going to hire Keith and move him down from Vermont, and he's going to run the aquarium services division. You may have a different idea of what goes in first, second, and third than I do, or than Alex does, or that Joe does, or Gio does, or Brandon does, or Josh does, or Ryan Lincoln, who's worked with us for 11 years now, does. Everybody's got a little bit of different experience, so they may feel more comfortable as first fish putting in a couple Bengai cardinals. And I thought to myself, well, sure, the tank rays, they're eating pellet foods in the office, but I'm not putting those in as the first fish. I'm going to put in 6 blue-green coromas and watch that happen for a week or two and start feeding the aquarium and getting the biology started. And that's a big part of what we continue to work on collectively as a team. And then I think nationally with some of the other players we're working with Fish Guy Professional Group too.
So I want to relay a question from one of the viewers, Reef Keeper. this is sort of like a question based on the video that we ran. In the video, there was a neon sign that said All Glass Aquarium. Can you ask Jeff if that was from the company that closed in the early 2000s from Milwaukee?
That's an absolute fact. And I did receive that all glass aquarium neon light from Matt Allen, who was the marketing manager. I built the aquarium in Roger Ritzau's private residence. There's the Ritzau brothers, Roger Ritzau and his brother. Gosh, I'm drawing a blank on his name in a second. But yeah, I worked with All Glass Aquarium for years in Central Garden and Pet as a marine aquarium advisor. And then I did all their trade show sets around the nation. So I actually had an Oceanic sign too, because All Glass bought them years ago. And that one broke, so I don't have it anymore. But that neon sign still works. I had it in my office today. I like to turn it on because it sets a tone in the space, and it really, you know, goes back.
It's a cool sign, man.
Yeah, 30, you know, going back, I've had that a solid 25 years, I bet you.
So, you know, with the with your residential business, or even your commercial business, what are you guys using, like a mass tank manufacturer, or are you actually doing custom glass tanks yourselves?
So we build all the glass aquariums ourselves. I've built a few over the years with Bob Elder, some of the bigger ones. I did one in Red Bank Veterinary Hospital. That was a glass tank that we built together. I built another one in Hackensack University Medical Center in Hackensack, New Jersey. That was glass in a frame. You know, some of the really big ones, this particular tank, I got to think about it. This one we built with a forklift, with a grabber for picking up big pieces of marble.
Ooh.
And I now have a gantry in the back that I do the same thing with. So
we saw that in the video, yeah.
Yeah, if we were to build that, we would, you know, use the chain fall to raise it up and put it, set it into the frame, and build it in-house. So we build all of our own glass aquariums. You know, we've built some glass aquariums for service guys over time, but we basically don't do it anymore because it's a hard thing to say I'm going to go suddenly, you know, build, I don't know, 300 aquariums a month, right? That is, you know, I don't know what planet is building, but I'm going to say hundreds of aquariums monthly. So, you know, how do you keep up with that? That's a task for the guys in Texas to figure out, not
yeah.
me.
Yeah, not your problem. What do you guys like in terms of features for the custom aquariums? You know, what kind of, Euro bracing, external overflows. Is there any theme in terms of what you like to recommend to customers for those different options?
Yeah, we love to put external overflows. I mean, it just makes sense, right? You're getting the box out of the box.
Yeah.
A box in the box reduces the space.
Yep, for sure.
Certainly Euro bracing all the way around, cross bracing too, depending on the size of the aquarium. And then, you know, I'll have aluminum frames built typically about a half inch larger to maybe even 3/8 of an inch larger than the width of the aquarium, right? Or the length of the aquarium, and do the same on the top. This has an aluminum frame bottom and top, same frame, 2x2 aluminum, welded, sanded down and powder coated. Obviously it's primed first, then powder coated. And that frame just keeps the glass in place, you know, I can't tell you how long. I mean, hopefully this tank is sitting here 20 years from now.
So is that not, open top tanks really not an option that size because you want the framing?
Yeah. I mean, rimless.
Yeah. Well, not rimless, yeah. But Euro bracing, you know, if you didn't want to like have a canopy on top of the tank, like the, like you got behind you, I mean, maybe that's an in-wall tank. I can't tell for sure.
Yeah, it's off the wall. I have an island style here that I'm looking at. The lights are off on it now because it's getting later. But that is an island style with no center braces. I took the glass, the rim around it, let's call it a perimeter of 3 inches on an aquarium that's about 96 by 28 by 30 tall. In half inch glass, I put on the runner, which is the long piece right on top, and the cross piece on the end, the runner on the other side. And then underneath that, after that had dried in place, I glued in another lap joint underneath that fits to it. So the top cap is 3 inches, the bottom cap was 2 3/8, let's call it. And then you go in there and you clamp that thing down. Now I've got this really rigid piece of glass that's holding the top of that aquarium. for that tank once it's filled with water. Is it a tank anymore, or is it an aquarium once it's filled with water? That's a good one.
No, I don't know.
It's an aquarium at that point.
Yeah.
Now, the person who taught me that was Mike Senske, right? It's an aquarium, Jeff. It's not a tank. You get a Sherman tank, you get a fuel tank, you get a water tank.
Yeah.
This is an aquarium. And he's right. Once it's filled with salt water, it's an aquarium.
Yeah.
So looking at the structural integrity is really important. You know, I'm not going to build something in somebody's home that is going to fail. That's not an option. So much so that even on this particular aquarium here, there's a, I can turn the camera over a little bit. You see the end of the tank right there. There's a piece of molding on it.
Yeah.
And that hides a frame. Inside that glass is a piece of 45 glass that I, you know, had made for us that we silicone into those frames. It starts growing algae eventually that you really can't get off unless you sit there with a tiny little toothpick. But that binds that seam to, in my mind, never come apart. We don't want leak and drip. Those are four-letter words followed by other four-letter words.
What?
I'm the first guy on this program that's ever said that. I promise you that. Leak and drip are four-letter words.
Yeah, that's the first time I've heard that, for sure. What about tank stands, Jeff? What would you say material-wise is the optimal thing to go with, like aluminum?
I mean, aluminum 80-20 is nice. We have a bunch of it here in the building. We've built a lot with it. Buddy's really great with it. And then, you know, as I have that material, I use it. If it's a sized aquarium that I feel comfortable putting on it. But a lot of the big work, like this one, is structural 2x2 stainless steel. Welded to ASTM standards, grinded down the welds. I mean, it's super clean. It's really solid. You'll put angular 45s on there. There's a lot of things you can do to even support it from, you know, forward collapse or lengthwise collapse. And it's built to last a lifetime. I have so many aquariums on structural stainless steel stands. Even this cylinder that I have on the West Coast right now is that I can't show you a photo of. I'm dying to show you a photo of it, but I can't. It's on a structural stainless steel stand that we had made with the curves and the whole thing. It's really intense. That was an expensive stand. I think the stand alone was $20,000. It's not cheap.
No.
But, I mean, that's just holding up the whole aquarium forever. So this aquarium that we're currently doing, I mean, you know, I'm looking at it for 20 years. And today I'd be 82 years old in 20 years. That'll be Joey's problem. He can figure that one out. But you got to think, I mean, if we're building a permanent installation, what are we going to do? We're not going to shortchange anything. And that is a really great question. You know, I built structural stands years ago out of freaking wood, you know, 2x6s or 2x8s bolted and screwed and glued together and holding up a 1,000-gallon reef aquarium. And you say to yourself, okay, well, I hope the termites don't show up.
I know. I've got wood stands, but they're built like pretty freaking solid. But, yeah, you know, it's – I think for me it was the 80-20, the aluminum, it was pricey, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is, but that's, you know, again, a barrier to entry. We, like I said, you know, we happen to be in South Florida. I mean, it's not unusual at all to find a $20 million home.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, it's not unusual at all to find a $50 million home. And it's not unusual at all to find a $100 million home here in South Florida. These things exist. So, you know, we talked about boats earlier today. You know, my wife has a hell of a boat. And it's a really strong boat. But I've broken some shit on that boat.
Oh, I bet she wasn't too happy about that.
Well, you know, it's my fault, so I have to deal with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, she likes going boating as well. We've been boating together now for 44 years.
Wow, that's a long time,
yeah,
man.
It is. Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a heck of a boat. And it's heavy. So it isn't like, you know, one of these go-fast cats nowadays or something that weigh maybe 12,000 pounds and they're 41 feet long. It's 42 foot and it weighs 23,000 pounds, empty.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's quite the vessel.
So I look at building aquariums, and you got to figure, if you think about what I was saying, you know, growing up in the industry, growing up in South Florida, growing up around boats my whole life, you know, I'm building something that holds water in it, not holds water out of it,
right,
in the same environment with salt water. So we may as well build it to last.
Yeah.
Right?
So when you're doing a design, a tank design for a customer, you know, and you have carte blanche, right? In terms of, like, maybe they give you a size in terms of length and width and height, or maybe it's a certain gallon or something like that. You know, I always say that if you go large in one dimension on a reef tank, and this is a reef tank, not like a fish only tank, go large on the width. What's your thought on that? Is that something that you guys tend to steer clients towards, like one dimension versus another, or do you kind of run the gambit?
I think we run the gamut, but the reality, Keith, of course, is the width, right? If we can get width, I mean, if I could make an aquarium, you know, an island-style aquarium that's 60 inches wide by 12 foot long and, you know, 36 inches tall, and you had access on three points on that aquarium, sure, but it just comes down into the space.
Yeah.
And you got to figure all those TV aquariums, not all of them, maybe 90% of them, that's pretty close to all of them, may not even be operational anymore. And I got to ask myself, well, you know, it was made for TV. So people see that and they come to you like, oh yeah, you know, put an aquarium, you know, floor to ceiling right there. You know, I mean, to the ceiling. Oh, how the hell do you take care of it? Oh, it doesn't matter. Just build it, right? And so they did on TV. And nobody, they never cared for them after. So I've just habitually, my whole life, thinking from a service perspective. That's how I think. So you certainly have had aquariums for many, many years too. You're thinking about how you're going to care for it. You're thinking about the animals that are going to grow into it. I'll give you dimensions. So the last one we just did on the West Coast as a reef, it's acrylic, 79, 30 inches wide, and you wait for you hear this, 56 inches tall.
See, I, you know, that's not my thing, man. But listen, everybody has their thing, you know, and I'm a stickhead, so I like the acros. And you know, the last tank I put in my house was a peninsula tank that's 6 foot long by 36 inches wide by 20 inches tall. And I freaking love that tank. I love that tank because it's the 20 inches tall, you know, I was a little nervous about it. But the great thing is, in terms of the aquascaping, you don't have to go crazy with the aquascaping. It's like basically two layers of rock. I put live rock into that tank. Nothing's glued together and all that stuff. There's no putty. There's no, you know, super glued stuff in there. It's just kind of like it's two layers of rock stacked together. Let the corals be the glue, you know?
Yeah. Well, that one I was just saying, 56 inches tall. You got to figure, okay, number one, it's acrylic, right? The front acrylic panel and the back acrylic panel, I think, are 2 inches thick to handle the pressure and not bow out. So the acrylic tanks, typically, we've for years had them built by Dave Safer out of Cal Aquaria. We've used others through the years, but Dave's always built a really good product for us. And it's a tall son of a bitch. So I had a custom fabricated aquarosh interior going into this aquarium, you know, scaling back and going up. And its theme is going to be, you know, a mixed reef with some emphasis towards softies. So it may not be what you would put in your house or I might put here for this stony coral aquarium. But right over there, I have a 400-gallon soft coral aquarium with intent.
Yeah.
And people come in and they say, oh, that green flowy stuff, it's so beautiful. I want that.
That's what I get all the time. I've got like 95% of my corals are Acropora, and people get drawn to the stuff that is moving. And I'm like, man. All right.
Right.
I guess that's whatever.
It's GSP, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I looked at it. I got some really nice, I don't know if it was green Nepthia, maybe another kind from TSA when I was up there a while back from Kevin Berta. Really beautiful, growing super well there. And I looked at that 56-inch tall aquarium. And again, we go back into design theory, right? We built a hell of a system. Now what are we going to do? Well, the reality is we just got started. And whatever goes in, you need to strategize and plan for what's going in the aquarium, you know, for this year, next year, and 5 years from today. That's a hard thing to do.
Yeah. I want to get a question in here from John Wright. With all Jeff's knowledge setting up his tanks, what does he recommend in terms of feeding fish and corals? Is that something that you would provide any advice on there, Jeff, or is that not your area of expertise?
No, I mean, you got to figure that it's a big portion of, you know, getting the team to recognize, right? Every aquarium is different. Every aquarium has a different bio load, a different system, a different fish capacity, maybe a different theme even in fish. And you need to work towards satiating the animals without over polluting the piss out of the fishbowl. And by doing that, you're going to do either water changes, denitrification, you know, absorption through algal growth. There's a lot of ways to deal with that. But the feeding, you know, we're using Ocean Nutrition. We're using Hikari. I use Pablo Peapot's foods, which is the New Life Spectrum. I really like the Hikari pellets, the green, I guess it's spirulina pellets. Those work great in the auto feeders for the tangs. And then the reef nutrition liquids, you know, there's a lot of them out there. And the larger the reef, I find it the more necessary to administer that food. Really, I think the best way is automatically. Today, I was talking in front of this aquarium on a call this morning with an interviewee, and I could see the fish run down to the end of the aquarium. Well, that's where it drips in. There's a flow cannon down there, a big flow cannon. That food drips right by it, and the fish go over there, and they congregate. And you can tell the natural behavior is really important. And that's what they look like on the reef, too, right? They're these planktivores, especially these antheas and the Celebrus wrasses, and you name these fish, they're all over. They need food, and we gotta feed them. And automating those liquid feeds is another step, right? It's another piece of equipment. You gotta have space. You know, I've even looked at little wine coolers, right? You throw a bottle of liquid foods in a wine cooler. You wrap the top of that thing. You put that on a peristatic pump, dosing food in, you hook that up to your apex or whatever the hell you're using to control it, and you can meter food in that way. That's an easy way for a consumer or a hobbyist to have a small feed vessel to satiate the antheas versus, oh shit, I'm going to pollution feed them at 6 o'clock when I get home. I'm late. Oh, it's going to be 7 o'clock tonight. Oh, the fish are going to be hungry. So things like that, like you're saying, what you need, I think you need automated foods too.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I did want to ask you about is flow in the tank. You know, I don't know what you guys got going on there in terms of the tank behind you, but, when you do these larger tanks or even, a semi-large like residential tank install, what, peninsula tanks, those are very tough in terms of designing flow for those tanks. Do you guys go with closed loop systems? I mean, they scare the crap out of me. Because having bulkheads underneath that potentially can leak. But, what are your thoughts on closed loops? And if you're not a believer in closed loops, what kind of recirculating pumps do you recommend?
I'll just go over this one quick. There's 8 MP60s on here and the one flow cannon. There's 4 nozzles returning, which are the sea swirls on the top going back and forth all the time. And then there's, believe it or not, at that time when I built this, I used the L2s from Ecotec on here, or L1s, whatever they were, the biggest ones at that time. If I was to change it again, I would not use those pumps. I would use something a little more robust. But again, if it's an unlimited budget, then I'm just going to order, Abyss 400s and throw 4 Abyss 400s on here and call it a day.
Yeah.
Plus the other flow pumps. So, going back to peninsula, this 400-gallon peninsula has 2 MP60s on the end, aiming down the length with no obstructions, kind of two-thirds of the way up. And there's 2 adductor nozzles on the surface pushing water to the end. And still, kind of no matter what you do, you end up with some scum at the end of the tank. And I saw it up there today. Unless you ramp it up and let it really rip roar, it's kind of hard to get that, or you take those surface returns so slightly one direction and aim them this way down the length, and it'll have a tendency to push off that surface scum that develops on the end of the aquarium. you know, island style aquariums are great. You're utilizing a lot of visual space, right? You're using three panels of a four panel tank. Notice it's a tank, it's glass. But it's, you know, it's spectacular. Island styles, I wish we could do more of them. But, you know, when you look at the design element, when you're dealing with a designer, right, or an architect, they're not necessarily looking at it to take up the middle of a space. They want to put it on a wall or, like I said, make it floor to ceiling.
A couple of things here. So we've got Than that just popped in, wanted to drop in to say hi to Jeff. I'm happy with the Deltek 16s I got from Rad. My second favorite pump to the to only the Abyss A400.
Yep.
Any tips, Jeff, in terms of hiding, plumbing, recirculating pumps in display tanks? Anything that, you know, potentially could be... helpful hints for folks designing their tanks?
Well,
things that you guys do?
Yeah, that pitches into the original question you just had, was do you use bulkheads and closed loop? Years ago, I used to use them all the time. I penetrated more holes in the bottom of aquariums than you could ever imagine. And yes, there's no question, a bulkhead might leak. What we would typically do is silicone both sides of it, underneath the tank, in the tank, with the gasket, silicone the living crap out of it. But long-term, you're going to get a shaft seal leak. You're going to have an issue. You're going to have a valve calcified. You're going to get something stuck in there. So we've shied away completely of using closed loop filtration. That answered your question.
Here, here.
So to his question, we may have to repitch that one again.
Well, yeah, know, my question is any tips for hiding recirculating pumps and tanks, you know, any thing that you can do. Steve Weiss is a guest that I had on about a year ago.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know Steve's history, but he had this iconic 1,000-gallon tank. Took a break from the hobby. He's got now a sick 400-gallon tank. I'm going to have him on in a couple of weeks, actually, again. But he has this. He had a brilliant design in his overflow that we talked about, where he pretty much had no visible pumps and plumbing in that tank, and it was a an incredibly well thought out design, but it's not something that, you know, I think a typical hobbyist might think about or might be able to put into action. But it's tough because I've got a Peninsula tank and I've got two MP40s on the viewing end of it. I've got two other MP40s on the back panel, and I've got two MP60s on that same panel. So I've got six, you know, Ecotec pumps in that tank, and you know, I'm used to looking at the pumps, but it's not terribly pretty. But it,
yeah, I think it's a tank within a tank is about the only way to achieve that. I've seen it done several times. I mean, Sanjay used to do it with his overflow box on the inside of the aquarium. He put pumps in there, or pumps on the outside box that would go back on the inside, and
yeah,
you know, now you're getting this massive turnover and seeing just a few nozzles. Here, it's hard to see the MP60s because they're kind of encrusted a bit.
Yeah.
And I have the keystone on the back. That's pretty much a signature of what we do and have done forever, putting keystone onto the non-viewable surfaces. That has a tendency over time to hide those MP60s or 40s. You still see the sea swirls up there rolling back and forth. But I think you have to not get so infatuated with hiding it. In your situation with a stony coral, you just have to build a new tank and refigure how you look at how you did it. So, you know, like in anything, even the Smithsonian built, you know, 15 plus years ago, would we do it the same? Some of it would be the same. But, you know, at that time, LEDs weren't anything, and I don't remember who I got those from. Somebody in Oregon years ago, we threw away those LEDs. They were disastrous.
This kind of dovetails into a question that John Ryan is asking. We'd all change things the next time, but what would Jeff's perfect tank be?
Yeah. Well, we have several of them, actually. The perfect tank is a willing client who, you know, understands that we're dealing with the biological elements in, you know, a closed environment, and that change is kind of necessary as things develop over time. So we had, well, I still have some of the Tunsies on it. So I have some of these big, monstrous Tunsies.
I used to have Tunsies.
Yeah, but the really big ones, right? The commercial grade, what do they call them? Water, not Water Wizards, I forget. That's a different product. But, you know, I recently replaced some of those, and I still love Tunsie products, too, with the flow cannons, just because we could.
Yeah.
And the client said, okay.
Yeah.
So that's not our standard procedure. I prefer to not start changing large pieces of mechanical devices, but you tell me, I mean, it's 5,000 gallons. It's growing like a weed. You know, flow is an important factor. And with those flow cannons, just by what I saw when I put it on this big 16-foot long aquarium, I mean, it made a dynamic shift for the whole aquarium. So a perfect aquarium, shit. I don't know. Give me $1 million or $2 million and figure it out. And then we'll build it.
We'll give you to tomorrow to figure that out.
Well, but typically what happens is we get a client or an architect or a builder, and they want to build this big aquarium, and we provide a proposal. We write it all down. There's a couple of stop gaps in there that say, you know, things could change, things could develop depending on the term that it takes. The house I'm working at on the West Coast here is 4 years in the making.
Whoa.
The house is 4 years under construction.
Wow.
What's happened in 4 years? We couldn't have even gotten a biz flow cannon at that time. So in that particular unit, because it's a cylinder, right, I'm using three-way Asahi motorized valves. So the current's going to go this way.
Wow.
For 6 hours. It's going to switch.
Cool.
Takes about 10 minutes, and then it's going to go this way for 6 hours, and it's never going to stop from that mode. So each one is, a work in progress and really an aquatic masterpiece. I think at the end of the day, if it's done well, it will work. So as long as we have great aquarists working within our team, and the team has direction, and the company is solid, and the client is willing to do it.
Yeah. Yep.
It doesn't stop. Your tank isn't stopping.
No.
Do you leave for a month ever?
I leave for weeks here and there. That's like the longest. I think 8 days has been the longest I've ever been away from my tanks. But I've been away a lot recently, and it makes me nervous to be away because, you know, I have to trust my wife and tank sitters and all that stuff. And, you know,
yeah.
I don't have any. I live in a rural area here in Vermont, so there's not a lot of like-minded folks that I can turn to and but Florida is a whole different thing, man. You got like
it's a whole different thing. And you did ask about that earlier too. You know, what other piece of equipment do you need? Well, you need backup power.
Yeah,
that's another really important aspect. Backup power.
Yep, I've got a full house backup generator plus a portable generator in case the full backup house generator fails, which has happened to me before.
Yeah, we have a full 150 kW generator for the entire building. I have enough fuel on site to run this building for a month off the grid.
Wow.
Yeah. And I have backup Honda generators and stuff, too, that we've had through time that I get service. I just ran mine at the house, not this Sunday, but the Sunday before for an hour, and just ran it with some high-test fuel and some additive just to make sure it's working for the house.
Yeah.
You got to run these things, right? So hopefully that answered that question about, you know, the perfect or dream aquarium. It would have no bugs. There'd be no such thing as an aptasia on the planet.
You know, getting back to flow, I see there's some comments about the gyros.
I'm
personally not a fan of them because I hate the maintenance on them. And this is just me. There's a lot of moving parts, you know, I'd used a bunch of them, and whenever it was time for me to do maintenance on them, I'd take them apart and soak them in, you know, some water and vinegar and scrub them and all that sort of stuff. And then I'd put them back together, and lo and behold, they would be binding or sticking and just not running the way, you know. I don't want to, harp on it, but I personally had a bad experience, using them just for the maintenance part of it. But they do serve a really good purpose. I saw somebody made a comment that they've seen them used on the Euro bracing and Peninsula tanks, and they hide They get hit really well within the Euro bracing. I used to use them in my frag tanks, 10-inch, 12-inch tall frag tanks. Stick them under the frag racks. I mean, you know, that's a great thing to shoot flow underneath the frag rack like that. So, you know, I just wish they were easier to maintain. That's my complaint about it. Mark Hibbard, of all the aquariums Jeff designed and showcased on their channel, what is his personal favorite?
Well, shit. You know, bigger, I guess bigger is better. When it goes to that, you just have more freedom of design. You have more freedom for things to grow in over time. You know, I got a lot of favorites. I mean, the 6,000 Atlanta is stunning. The 5,000 we built over here in Fort Lauderdale is stunning. This one has gained success over time here in the office. Shoot, I have a two-story jellyfish aquarium that's spectacular that I still haven't been able to show, but I've gotten really close and I've gotten permission now to photograph. So hopefully I'll be able to show that one soon once I submit that to the owner's staff and they approve it for me to publish it. And it's just jellyfish, but it's spectacular, I'm telling you right now. You know, from an aquarist standpoint, a management standpoint, they're really spineless and brainless and maybe a little easier than growing coral.
Yeah, we haven't talked at all about your jellyfish art, you know, business. I mean, that to me is like, I have no clue in terms of what it takes to maintain jellyfish. I mean, how hard is it to maintain jellyfish? Are they easier than corals? Are they, you know, are there certain things that you got to kind of really be watching out for?
Well, I'll give you a couple on that one. So the first jellyfish aquarium I ever built was at Stake 954. It's now running over 15 years. Successfully, continuously, has never been emptied and drained, ever. Running continuously. And we grow all of our own jellyfish back here. That was the first one I ever built. And when I looked at them, I had been to Monterey Bay. I had been to Long Beach Aquarium. I'd been to Aquarium of the Americas. I had seen jellyfish aquariums all around and internationally as well. And I thought, why don't they increase the flow a little bit? I mean, why is it so slow? You can't keep the bottom clean. So when I built Stake 954's aquarium, it is a double chrysal, and I just amped the living crap out of it and put flow on the floor. And I put a ramp in the middle, so it's a double chrysal, and it helps keep the floor clean. Another thing I noticed when I was doing this was I was told from the scientific community I can't use carbon or GFO or things like that because it could hurt the jellyfish. Well, I disproved the hell out of that. And one of the things you want to do with jellyfish, especially on a larger scale commercially, is run phosphates at or near zero, and I mean dead zero. Oh. If you don't have biological media that's calcium carbonate, and it's only plastic anywhere within this box, right? This tank. That's a tank, a box. Then it won't grow algae. Imagine that.
There you go.
No phosphate. There's no algae. Hello, Earth to Jeff.
What a rad concept.
Yeah, so a rad concept, right. So, you know, that's been a real success story. And then thinking, as we talked about, you know, I've been diving my whole life. I have seen trillions of jellyfish, trillions for sure. I can count that high. And jellyfish, they eat all the time, right? They're out in the open ocean. They're a planktonic creature that's swimming, well, floating in the abyss continuously. So it's always eating. So how do you deal with something like that, right? You got to feed it. And you got to feed it more frequently or in a span period of time over a 24-hour period, and they'll live and grow. The other thing about jellyfish is, this is another really important thing to recognize, they're always in a growing state. They're typically not getting smaller unless they're getting older and dying, or they're not getting enough food and they're shrinking, or too much nitrates, and that's affecting them too. So, you know, keeping them up suspended, I mean, that's actually pretty easy. I'm looking at another one right now. There's another one right behind me over here. Whoa, let's move this camera. We'll go that way. Whoa, there's a jellyfish.
There you go, jellyfish.
Over there.
Cool.
That's an island style too. And, you know, those aquariums, can be pretty easy to manage, but you have to have a constant source of growing them. We've been growing jellyfish in this building for 6 years nonstop, and we've been growing jellyfish, I think, for about 8.5 years now, constantly. It never stops. So somebody's in the building 365, like any real coral farm, you know, Chris Meckley, Worldwide Corals, TSA, just go down the list of everybody across the country. Somebody's in all those buildings every single day of the year. So you always got to have this constant cycle of jellyfish under production. And if they get too big or too old over time, they basically, when they get too big and they're kind of getting near their end of the life cycle, they actually start to shrink. And then they just disappear. So they don't just go, I'm dead, and fall down on the bottom of the tank. They don't do that. They might get stuck up in an overflow. That happens sometimes. But yeah, you got to have a constant state of them. So, you know, you just sell more jellyfish or you provide them. So we have packages in our service division for jellyfish. And I had one client come through here. The owner's rep came through and we said, look, you know, it's $500 a month and we can keep jellyfish ad nauseum forever in the aquarium. You don't have to worry about buying them. You're just going to pay us $500 a month. It seems like a lot of money, but the jellyfish aquarium is 2,000 gallons. So in a year's period of time, they're giving us $6,000. They never have to think about the animals. And when the lady left here, before she left, she goes, Jeff, we're going to go for the all-you-can-eat jellyfish package. And I just died laughing because I thought it was funny. And it was kind of funny. You know, it is an animal. We're doing our best to keep them alive and grow them. But, you know, it may have been easier because some folks sometimes have a difficult time keeping them. And until you've done it, and maybe you worked at a public aquarium or you understand life cycles, you've done aquaculture before, then you get a grasp of it. It's actually pretty easy. But I say that with, you know, I don't know, 16 years of experience keeping jellyfish. And we have now locally, about 16 jellyfish exhibits. And we've sold thousands of the small jellyfish art aquariums, thousands and thousands of those over time. And now there's a new one out right now that's just getting launched. Tropic Marine Center in England, Quality Marine in California is their distributor for this hemisphere. And we're taking in hundreds of them actually soon, like literally in the next 10 days, and we'll start selling those too. They won Best New Product at Super Zoo for the Chrysal 10 and the Chrysal 15. So it's a 10 liter or a 15 liter custom fab injection molded plastic jellyfish aquarium. It's pretty cool.
Nice.
So we're going to start selling those right now too with our own. And I actually, believe it or not, have two different models that we're currently working on. And I'm ultimately going to make a more inclusive jellyfish aquarium that will have more filtration in mind to deal with things we just talked about, phosphates, nitrates, organic matter getting pulled out of solution. It's got to happen. So like your reef aquarium, you're going to have some nitrate, right? You're going to have a little phosphate. You're keeping those in check to some level. It's the same with the jellyfish aquarium. But you got to feed the living crap out of them.
Gotcha. All right, man, I'm going to ask you one more question. I'm going to let you go. You mentioned earlier the Fish Guy Professional Group. What is it and how does RAD work with those folks?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, years ago, I started an organization called Professional Aquarium Sales and Service Association. Then we transitioned that name to NASA, which was National Aquarium Service Organization. I always had wanted to try to professionalize a national network of aquarium services professionals, right? We're all doing different things. I'm not building ATM aquariums or Living Color that's now gone aquariums either. And there's a group of us that are building different styles of different aquariums all across the country. And what I find within that group of people is that there is the desire from many of them that I've mentioned some of those names already to continue to professionalize what they're doing and take this hobby into more of a professional industry. And that's what I really like about it, personally. And I've said it to the whole team. I mean, we have certainly you know, one of the finest portfolios of marine reef and jellyfish aquariums available in this hemisphere and potentially even the world. I would be hard pressed to find any one of our members or anybody that I know worldwide that has a portfolio of this significance. So we have the imagery, right? And we didn't get here by accident. This is with intent. So now what do we do? And I always thought, well, can I monetize the images? Can I monetize the video? What could I do? Oh, shit, maybe I'll do a podcast. You got that covered. I'm not doing that. So, you know, that's the whole impetus of it. Some of those guys are way more organized than we are. Kurt Harrington at Something's Fishy up in Connecticut, up your way.
Yeah.
He's really organized. Dave Reagan over at Reliant Aquarium Design, he has the same three letters, RAD. I don't know how he got away with doing that, Dave, if you're listening. Mike Sensky out in Texas, right? They do some planted freshwater. Mike and Jeff Sensky have been doing, you know, big aquariums, a lot of freshwater cichlids for years. Mark Silverman up there. You got Brian Dunleavy. You've got some other guys all over the country. And how we work together is for the, it's very interesting, right? It's, you know, it's a small cost for all of us to get together every single month. Kurt leads that part of it. But ultimately, we're helping each other with the segments that we may not have mastered, but in different markets. So that's the big key. So I can help Mike as much as he wants in Texas. And I think what we witnessed with the Tank TV debacle was it imploded upon itself by building aquariums all over the country with no service plan. And all of our businesses are based off of services. So if we don't have a quality installation, then how the hell are you going to take care of it? It's going to it's going to fall apart.
That's an important part.
Yeah, so we also trade information and we're sharing this stuff, I'm going to tell you right now, for free between ourselves. That doesn't mean I'm going to let you come over here and open an aquarium service business. It would probably take you 20 years to catch up with us anyways. So good luck.
Yeah, no thanks. You guys got that covered.
Well, it's a lot of work. And like I said, you know, there's not really, there is a day off. You know, I took 34 days with Jolene last year to Australia and around the world.
Nice.
And I did that comfortably without any real significant concern about all of the projects we have. It's when you get into finishing them, just like this other massive one that we're doing. Well, it's only 2,000 gallons, but still it's big. In the West Coast right now, you know, it's spectacular. It takes a lot of time to think through what the end game is going to be because it just starts the day you put salt water in.
Yeah. So, Jeff, man, how if folks are interested in working with you guys, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
I mean, they can go to the website, reefaquariodesign.com. You know, we have Deltek USA, Jellyfish Art, ChemiPure. Obviously, we didn't really get into ChemiPure at all. But, you know, number one aquarium filtration media brand, all those websites and companies we own housed right in this building. And I think what really should happen, Keith, is you should get your ass on an airplane and come down and see this place.
I'd love to. I didn't realize you gave tours.
Yeah, I give tours. And then if you're coming, you and I are going fishing.
Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah, that's an extra incentive.
We have an excuse to run the boat and Jolene will say, okay.
That's, I like that. All right. You've got permission, huh?
Yeah, that's easy.
Well, listen, Jeff, man, this was a lot of fun chatting with you. I really appreciate you taking the time. And thanks, man. It was a lot of fun and very much appreciated. And I'm sure everybody out there that was tuning in appreciated, you know, having you on as well.
Yeah, you're very welcome. It's an honor to be on. And you should come in January when it's snowing up there. Get out of the snow.
I'm a big skier, you know, so but my wife always complains because she always wants me to go to Florida with her, you know, for a week out every month in the wintertime. I'm like, well, hold it. It's like puking snow up here. I can't leave because, you know, it's like,
well, I'll just give her my phone number and I'll get her and my wife talking and we'll figure it
there
out.
There you go. There you go. All right, Jeff, man. Thanks.
All right, buddy.
I just thank you. And I also want to thank my sponsors one more time, Polar Reef. Make sure to check out Polar Reef's new YouTube video that drops this Friday. It's a road trip time and the Polo team drives deep into New Jersey for a Japanese koi show and festival. Andrew had six of his prize koi in the competition, and let's just say that anxiety and a mix of other emotions were definitely flowing. Find out if the judges deem the Polar Reef koi worthy or subpar. Make sure to subscribe to their YouTube channel at Polar Reef for video drop notifications. Champion Lighting and Supply, besides being a place for hobbyists to purchase saltwater aquarium supplies online, Champion Lighting is also a wholesale distributor for many popular brands. If you own an aquarium store or an aquarium service company, contact Champion Lighting through their website at championlighting.com to set up a wholesale account. Polyp Lab is another supporter of this live stream. They do their part by being ecologically responsible, using less plastic and more recyclable material. Reefroids is backed by science and uses 100% ocean-sourced ingredients. No filler, no OGM, no gimmick. Polyp Lab, straight results. The best choice for your marine collection. See the Reefroids difference for yourself. A big thank you to Paul, who's also the moderator as well as the president of the Boston Reefer Society. Please join and support your local reefing clubs. They are so, so important to this hobby. I also want to let you know that all episodes of Rap on the Reef Bum are available as podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Amazon. My next Rap on the Reef Bum live stream will be in 2 weeks on Tuesday, September 17th, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I mentioned this before. My guest will be Steve Wiest, also known as Oregon Reef. You can check out the full upcoming schedule of guests on reefbum.com under the YouTube section. Until next time, be safe and be well. Later.